Blue lights come on. I do. Good morning, colleagues. I'd like to call to order this public hearing on Senate Bill 5514, this meeting of the Subcommittee on Education of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for Thursday, February 9th. Thank you all for being here. And I don't think I have to hit the gavel again. I have to open the hearing. All right. I opened the meeting. Now I'm opening the hearing on Senate Bill 5514, which is the funding bill for the Board of Dentistry. Do we have Stephen Prisby, the executive director here? Please come forward. And also our good friend Anthony Medina from DAS will be the fiscal officer for this as well. So welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
And please introduce yourself for the record.
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Prisby. I'm the executive director for the Board of Dentistry, and I live in Portland. I appreciate this opportunity this morning to meet with you, give you an agency overview, answer your questions, and testify in support of our budget bill, Senate Bill 5514. The presentation I prepared for you is somewhat lengthy, so what I plan to do is cover the highlights and focus on what in the past the legislative body has requested from us. As I'm going through the presentation, please let me know if you have any questions or need any additional clarification. The Board of Dentistry was established by the legislature 130 years ago in 1887 to regulate the practice of dentistry. In 1946, dental hygiene was added to the purview of the board. There are 10 members appointed to this policymaking board and 8 permanent full-time staffers. The 10 board members include 6 dentists, one of whom must be a specialist, 2 hygienists, and 2 public board members. The members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. They serve 4-year terms, and they could serve two terms. The board meets every other month. We also have committee meetings, roughly 6 to 8 per year, and also a public rulemaking hearing. Our board members reside across the state. We have members living in Enterprise, Medford, Eugene, and throughout the Portland metropolitan area from Hillsboro to Happy Valley. The board's mission is to promote high quality oral health care in the state of Oregon by equitably regulating dental professionals. Our identified goals are to protect the public from unsafe, incompetent, or fraudulent practitioners, encourage licensees to practice safely and competently in the best interests of their patients, and educate the public on acceptable and appropriate dental practices. The board's highest priorities are the enforcement, monitoring, licensing, and exam of dentists and dental hygienists. The board is supported solely from application license renewal fees, permit fees, miscellaneous receipts, penalty fees, and civil penalties. 95% of this revenue is from license and permit fees. The board last raised fees in 2015, specifically to fund a new dental investigator position. This chart shows you an overview of our annual performance progress report. This is from 2015. For the various KPMs, on the left side, you can see 1 through 5. For the percent of licensees in compliance, we achieved that goal at 100%. For number 2, for the average time from receipt of a new complaint to completed investigation, the goal was 3.5 months, which has been a goal on the books for about 10 years. For our period between July 2014 and June 2015, we were about 12 months.
How does that compare to how you were earlier? Is that an improvement, the 12 months?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. This has edged up the last couple of years from 2015, 14, 13, from roughly 10 months, 11 months, 12 months. But with the addition of the new investigator, we're seeing the case backlog being reduced, and this average is going down.
Okay, thank you.
For number 3, the average number of working days for the receipt of completed paperwork to the issuance of the new license, we achieved that goal at 7 days. For number 4, for our overall satisfaction from our customer service survey, a goal of 85% positive responses, we achieved 88%. And for board best practices, this is where the board members actually do a self-evaluation of themselves every year, the goal of 100%. And the board gave themselves a 93% rating. Here's a look at our actual customer service survey for each specific question that we ask. And I'm very happy to say that our administrative team and our support team with answering questions and responding to questions has done a good job. Each question, we've received positive responses, which we equate that to be either an excellent, good, or fair rating on every single one from question 1 through 6, from timeliness to the ability of us to provide services, helpfulness, knowledge, availability of information, and overall service.
Excuse me again. Do you follow up with the ones that respond poor, or are they anonymous?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. We follow up when we get comments. Sometimes they're negative and they're just people venting, perhaps. But we have an option for them to actually solicit actual comments, and we do appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
The board has three major areas of service. One is licensing and examination. We license dentists and hygienists. We oversee examinations for specialties and establish standards for use of anesthesia in offices, including 4 levels of anesthesia permits and certified dental assistants. Background checks are conducted on all new applicants, and applicants must pass a written national exam, a clinical exam that is recognized by the board, and pass our board's jurisprudence exam. We audit 15% of all our licenses every year when they renew their licenses to make sure they're in compliance with our continuing education requirements. There are approximately 3,800 licensed dentists and 4,300 licensed hygienists currently. We anticipate issuing about 1,000 new licenses during the current biennium, equally divided between dentists and hygienists. And then in the 17-19 biennium, we anticipate issuing about 5% more, about 1,050. This next chart will show you a historical look at our workload for licensing and exams. And you can see from the previous bienniums all the way to the right to the current biennium what we're projecting. So the workload has steadily been increasing with new licenses, renewals, permits, and the certifications for dental assistants.
Ms. Representative Hernandez.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I was looking at your 2015 performance. Is there a reason why you don't have 2016 data yet?
Great question. Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Hernandez. The report was kind of generated at the end of last year, and so the information was plugged in. So at the moment, the 2016s are available, but when this report was generated, we had the 15 data.
Follow up. Just because I'm new, and in the last two reports that I've seen, or the last two boards that we've reviewed had 2016 data, and that's why I asked.
It's just the timing of the report when we started putting it all together.
Okay.
Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
In the past, we're getting more and more dentists all the time, but in the past, at least, most of them were residing in and serving in the urban areas, and there was a shortage of dentists and dental hygienists in some of the rural parts of the state. Is that still the case, and is anything being done to modify where all these new dentists disperse?
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, members of the committee. It's a great question. For the board, we don't really have a control where they reside. We do work with the OHA and the dental school, and they have some programs where they're trying to put the right resources in the right areas where they're underserved populations. So bottom line, we license folks, but we have no way to say where you should work or not work. But we are aware of it, and the board members do get information from the various professional associations, the dental school and OHA, about what they're doing.
Is there a way you could track? Go ahead, sir.
Follow up. Yeah. Are there any incentive programs? For some other areas in the medical profession, we've provided some incentives where if they serve in a rural area for a certain length of time, a portion of their school debts are paid or something like that, some kind of financial incentive to get more to serve the rural populations of the state.
Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, members of the committee. I believe the Oregon Dental Association is working on that project and possibly having a bill coming through that you'll be looking at this session to address that and help out with incentivizing that.
Good. Good. Let me know, because otherwise Gerard will be all over me.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So with the Medicaid expansion, I think we're up to about 1 million people on the Oregon Health Plan. And one of the things that I hear is that access to dental care, you know, through CCOs and things is still an issue. Is that, you know, is that because we don't have enough dentists and we need more of them? Is it just we have more people than, you know, with who've had probably long-term need that went unmet before they had insurance? I mean, can you sort of speak to what that looks like in terms of how many people we have versus what's kind of happening, boots on the ground, and do we need to, like, you know, Senator Marosa, do we need to find ways to incent dentistry to meet that demand?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Parrish. That's a great question. I don't have the answer for it. I do know that with OHP expanding and so many more folks and getting health care and dental care, that certain providers are looking at that area. I'm aware of Advantage Dental that focuses a lot on OHP clients. I think sometimes the bottom line can talk about the money. Can you pay for these services? What will the reimbursement rates be? Is it worth a dentist's time who's coming out with a debt load of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then they're looking to practice, and is the, can it financially work for them? I think overall we have we are quite well suited with the numbers of hygienists and dentists in the state. The mismatch might just be because of the financial incentives to work on OHP patients.
Thank you. And I apologize if this will be later in your presentation, but is there a way you guys could put together some sort of map or chart of, even if it's by addresses of your licensees, of where they either reside or serve, to give us a sense of how many are where?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. Yes, absolutely. We can give you a list of addresses. Now, this could either be their mailing or work address. Right. That's what they provide the board.
And to be clear, I don't want a list.
but we can geographically make a simple
great.
Chart.
Yes.
If that
Thank
will
you.
Work for you.
Yes. That would be great. Thank you. Go ahead. Oh, sorry. Representative Wisnett.
Thanks. Thank you, Co-Chair. Just for the committee's information, my dentist works 2 days a week in Burns from Bend, and one every other week, and then one day the next week. So there's a demand and a market, and I'm sure the dentist, he's open an office he has there that's a big demand. He said he could probably work every day there in Burns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Another area of service is enforcement and monitoring. The board conducts investigations of complaints filed with us alleging unacceptable patient care or other issues ranging from unprofessional conduct, improper prescribing practices, substance abuse, unauthorized use of auxiliaries, advertising, or if they've been disciplined in another state. The majority of these cases involve allegations of unacceptable patient care. Investigations are conducted based on reports of malpractice claims that are submitted by insurance companies. Disciplinary actions are reported to the National Practitioners Data Bank and to the Healthcare Integrity Protection Data Bank. Licensees under disciplinary sanction are actively monitored to assure their compliance with the terms of their order, including licensees with substance abuse issues who have long sought treatment and recovery needs.
Representative Lively.
Thank you. So I had a question back at the previous slide. So I've recognized over the years going to dentistry, certain things are changing, especially changing in relationship to what assistants or dental assistants can do. But I had questions specifically about the anesthesia permit. So I'm trying to understand, so is that both dentists and dental assistants? Is that additional? I assume it's additional training that has to be provided. So this is on top of the license that they get to be practicing?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Lively. We don't issue anesthesia permits to dental assistants, but this is about new issuances of permits and renewal. And yes, it is additional education they need beyond their initial licensure.
Okay.
Dentists only have anesthesia permits.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Go ahead.
Great. So this was a chart showing you some information about the investigations. There's usually 50 licensees being monitored on a regular basis. During calendar year 2015, the board received 221 complaints and closed 220 investigations. The disposition of those cases is showed below in that chart. The third area of service is administration, administrative activities include implementation of board policy, communication, collaboration with the professional associations. And we have good working relationships with the Oregon Dental Association, the Oregon Dental Hygienist Association, and the Oregon Dental Assistance Association. The School of Dentistry, other educational programs, health-related licensing boards, including medical board, pharmacy board, nursing board, medical denture technology, in addition to the state dental director, Dr. Bruce Austin. Administration also includes legislative activities, including budget development, monitoring, and staffing. A major component of administration is carrying out the board's primary goal of communicating with licensees and the public. This includes maintenance of our website, production of newsletters, scheduling and presenting information to students, licensees, and public about board and our activities. This slide shows you a brief summation of our accomplishments during the current biennium. We welcomed and onboarded two new board members. We added three new staffers. This is based on some turnover, but adding the new dental investigator, so the board has 8 full-time staffers. I was hired permanently in June 2015, replacing a previous executive director who was here over 11 years. And we continue to cultivate and strengthen our positive relationships with the professional associations, OHA, school dentistry, and the other hygiene and assisting programs throughout the state. The board embarked on strategic planning in 2016 with our plan finalized in August. The last strategic planning that the board undertook was back in 2007. And during the strategic planning session, which we have our document on our website, the board identified 5 strategic priorities: ensuring patient safety, managing the changing, evolving model of dentistry, manage investigations and case complexity, succession planning. 4 of 8 of our staffers are eligible to retire in the next 3 years, and retaining agency autonomy. We also utilize our board website, OBD newsletter, and the other associations, including email blasts and other appropriate communication tools to inform licensees of relevant OBD news, rules and updates, and changes in practice of dentistry. We oversaw the implementation of new initiatives with the Dental Assisting National Board with certification of dental assistants, and the investigative case backlog has been reduced significantly. This next information is about our financial projections as the biennium ends. The ending balance is projected to be a bit higher than what was budgeted, approximately by $200,000. Some key factors are part of that contributing to the excess ending balance. That includes the merchant card convenience fee. Higher revenue collected from fines and forfeits is projected to be $160,000 versus budgeted of $75,000. New license and renewal fees are tracking a little higher in the budget by about $100,000. And then personal services are projected to be under the budget by about $198,000, with the new investigator not hired until January 2016. Also, we had staff turnover, and then myself as the new executive director is not compensated as the previous executive director. Attorney fees and professional services are trending higher, and these are projected to be about $78,000 higher than budgeted. However, attorney fees could be significantly higher with our current pending caseload.
Representative Fernandez.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So for your goals that you were just talking about, if I can find language here, investigative case backlog reduced, do you know what number the backlog was and what number it's at now?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Hernandez. It's kind of a moving target, but when we get investigations, we obviously triage them and see what's most critical, what's most important based on investigator and board member feedback. But we were looking at a caseload or backlog before of about 100 cases, and now we're looking at it under 40.
And follow. Thank you. So the 2015 performance goal was 3.5 months, and then the actuality was 12 months. Have you seen improvement in that throughout 2016? And do you know what that percentage is?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Hernandez. Yes, we believe 2016 we're down towards 10 months from 12 months, and we're seeing that trending lower. Now, we don't have the control, any control over the complaints we receive. And some cases will take a long time, especially as a patient sees multiple providers. So part of due process is we need to collect the records, get the narratives, the testimony from the doctors or hygienists involved, compile all that, let the dental investigative staff review it before we can get to a determination and present it to a board for the board to decide if it'll be a disciplinary issue or not.
Is that sufficient? Representative Wisnant?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Director, is it Prisby? Following up or piggybacking on the deal about the backlog, how long was the new investigator's position was vacant for how long?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnant. The fee increase went in July 2015 for that start of the budget. So from July through January, 6 months or approximately, it was empty. And so then in January 2016, the investigator was hired.
Okay.
Follow up. Thank you. Director, I guess I'm assuming we're going to get an organizational chart of your FTEs by CFO. It's not in yours. Did I miss that in your presentation? But how many investigators do you have?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnant. It's in our governor's budget. We have four investigative staff. Out of eight, we have four investigative staff and three administrative licensed people and myself.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my concern is we have this, you're taking 12 months instead of 3.5, which is your goal. But if this new investigator gets in other words, is that to get us back to where we should be? But I'm concerned we do limited position FTEs to get you caught up. Are you going to have more investigators than you need if the backlog is eliminated? So that's, I guess, my question is, are you going to have too much after the backlog is resolved and should be contracting right now to work the backlog? Thank you.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnant. That's a great question. We've been using dental consultants in the past, and as we ramped up and got approved to hire the new full-time investigator, that was to eliminate the consultant investigators because they weren't as efficient because they've typically been part-time versus a full-time committed investigator. We do not anticipate that we will ever get completely caught up.
Okay.
Population of Oregon is growing. Complexity of investigations is always going to be high from this point forward. It's not going to be more simple. I think we could always talk about this in future budget presentations, but I don't anticipate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Representative Hernandez.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I hear what you're saying, but for your 2017-2019 agency goals, I don't see it necessarily a goal where you're working towards reducing that percentage of what you said it was this year, 2016, 10 months?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Hernandez. I wasn't going to be able to list all our goals. Definitely our KPMs, our key performance measures, are always embedded in what we do. It's a part of our job. I'm anticipating we'll get closer to 10 months when we report in the next time.
Okay.
But the trend is going in the right direction.
Follow up. You're doing really well with your financial projections, and I imagine that you would set goals so that, and maybe you implied based on that comment that you do have a goal to get to your key performance target. It just doesn't seem like that you have it listed on here. I'll go to a positive note and really appreciate the goal oriented towards increasing the ethnic and racial makeup of those that are licensed and those that are educators. I haven't seen that goal in other presentations, so I appreciate seeing it here.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin?
So I guess what I would ask is, the 3 months a realistic goal? I think all of our agencies are finding that these investigations are taking more time. They are more complex. They have other kinds of issues that create a timeliness, getting it done. And so I guess what I would say is that 3 months a realistic expectation? I know that some go very quickly because you check them out and they're gone. So the average. And I guess at some point I'd love to know if you're feeling you're getting closer, come down to 10, but is there a realistic basis on where that number is based on the kinds of new cases you're getting?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Senator Roblin, thank you. I think 3.5 is a highly optimistic goal.
And,
but I like the historical perspective that we have the KPM embedded every year shooting for that. If we raise that bar and we go to 6 or 9, we could, and it's something we would consider. But I appreciate having a target and striving for it. Now, when we can communicate with consumers and they file a complaint, in our complaint process and packages, we talk about 6 to 9 months is more typical. And we set expectations. So, you know, they don't think they're going to get a decision in a week. But they know that when it's complex and they've seen multiple providers, it'll go over a year.
Typical. Thank you.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, a little history on this. Last biennium, this committee reviewed what we thought was an unacceptable length of time that some of these cases were being dealt with, and that you were using, or the board was using, essentially contract people rather than having a new full-time investigator. So we gave you the new full-time investigator, but that hasn't been in effect long enough to really get that 12 months down to an acceptable number, which I would think would be in the 6 to 8 range. That would certainly be acceptable compared to what other boards are doing. But it sounds like you're moving in that direction, and so we're working together. That's our job. You're doing your job. You're new, relatively
right.
New. But we appreciate the fact that you're making inroads, and essentially you're doing what this committee asked you to do when we gave you the full-time investigator.
Thank you.
And I have to say, I always, whenever I see a lot of KPMs that are fully being met, I think, well, then you need to raise your KPM. So, so I appreciate the fact that you have aspirational goals. Go ahead.
Thank you. So this information here is for our general goals for 2017-19. It's not inclusive. There's many goals. But we want to implement our 2017-2020 strategic plan initiatives. Continue to promote and encourage participation in the statewide HPSP program, which is a diversion program for licensees with substance abuse addictions. Continue to promote and encourage participation in the volunteer dentist and hygienist programs, increase quality dental care. Not on this slide, but I do want to point out that we've had folks from the State Emergency Registry of Volunteers in Oregon present to the board, and we are encouraging participation in that as well. And continue to use the OAGD, which is the Academy of General Dentistry Mentoring Program, as one avenue to resolve disciplinary cases. Continue to educate consumers on their options regarding complaints, the process, and alternative means to resolution. The Oregon Health Plan actually has their own complaint form and process to deal with complaints that way, even though we still have purview over complaints. And the Oregon Dental Association is very proactive on their peer review program, where they try to work with consumers when there's issues that aren't serious or a patient care issue. To resolve that, it might be a billing or a personality issue with dental personnel. We promote the Oregon Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, utilize our website, newsletter, and other presentations to communicate board policies and expectations. We're refining our online renewal process, update requested and required reporting requirements. We collect data on the ethnic and racial makeup of our licensees and work with policymakers, educators, and students to encourage a representative diversity in the dental workforce. Refine participation in the Healthcare Workforce Initiative Project to address the issues of healthcare workforce shortages and access. Implement more electronic media for communication and support legislative and governor's initiatives on protecting the health and welfare of all Oregonians. We're going to switch gears now and talk about the essential packages. Anthony can address the technical adjustments. There's one big technical adjustment. That's package 60. And this adjustment was based on legislative change, House Bill 4016 in 2016, which caused a shift from the OHA to the boards for the Healthcare Professional Services Program. And this is occurring in the 2017-19 biennium. We're currently having meetings now to work on this transition from the OHA to the boards, basically directing this. So we aren't sure the actual cost savings as this changes. So the package was basically just moved from a technical adjustment in our budget. The policy option packages, we have four of them proposed. These four packages total approximately $53,000. Package 101 is security. It's an $8,000 package, and this is basically to provide security at board meetings. Board members and staff have expressed concerns about their safety when attending public meetings at times. And we believe this would be a good idea to have a security guard present at all public meetings, whether it's a board meeting, committee meeting, or a public rulemaking hearing.
Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Director, this is not facetious. The new directive that's come out that's about CHLs for employees, that doesn't affect your board members, right?
Concealed handgun licenses.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett. From the policy, it appears it does. It would board members and staff members.
Thank you. Co-Chairs and committee members, I think this bill is a terrible reflection upon our society when volunteers are given their time to do this service. They're not paid to do this. Yes, they do get per diem, but that our society has changed so much that people don't seem safe going to a meeting.
Yeah.
I mean, it bothers me as a person that wore a uniform for some time that we don't even feel safe serving the public. That I'll vote for the $8,000, but just we need to think about that in our day-to-day work and comments and everything. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Thank you. All the packages, of course, I'll just remind you that the board is a other funds agency, and all the funds generated are from fees paid by our licensees. It's kind of cut off. The next package, scroll up. Is package 102, a paperless project. Purpose of this package is to provide funding to replace our existing board books, mm-hmm. which are saved on a thumb drive and mailed to our board members prior to all board meetings. We want to replace that with a tablet-based packet delivery system where the board members would have a tablet and we could remotely upload all the important board meeting documents. We believe, there's a lot of detail there, but we believe this would eventually save staff time as we prepare for board meetings. The document is eventually created into a PDF, saved on a thumb drive, and mailed. These documents can be up to 1,600 pages prior to a board meeting. It's a lot of material for a board member to read. So with us uploading it to a tablet and having them get it sooner than waiting on the mail and getting it into their laptop or device, we give them a little more time to review the material. But on our side, it'd be less intensive on the staff to actually prepare the board book, which, as you imagine, was 1,600 pages. And if you looked at our board materials, you can see there's a lot of moving parts in that. So that's package 102. Package 103 is patient safety initiatives. purpose of this package is to fund safety initiatives that the board identified in the April 2016 strategic planning session, focusing on two main patient initiatives. This is anesthesia and sedation and dental implants. And basically with this package, we want to be able to incorporate extra board meetings so that we can address these initiatives and go forward with our strategic planning plan. Package 104 is board member compensation. This is to fund our volunteer board members. The compensation changes annually, and it shows you some background information on the compensation, what we pay our board members per day of service. So for example, a typical board meeting, the board member would get paid one day of preparation to get through those 1,600 pages of documents and information, and then one day for the board meeting itself. And for our board members traveling in from either an Enterprise, Medford, or Eugene, they get travel time as well. And of course, our board members get reimbursed for their mileage. And so those four policy option packages total approximately $53,000. That's approximately 1.5% of our proposed budget when you look at it in that context. The agency challenges for 2017-19 and beyond, including initiating our strategic plan initiatives, onboarding new staff. We will have new board members this year and getting them up to speed on doing their jobs, retaining our staff. But unfortunately, at some point, these folks have to retire as well. So we'll have transition with the older retirees. And we've had staff that have served us over 30 years, over 26 years, 20 years. So we have a really nice mix of new faces, new blood, and veterans with a lot of institutional knowledge and background. And then we need to implement the IT projects either as directed from executive orders or internally with the tablet-based system. And of course, those are just some of the challenges. Of course, we want to do all the other things we're required by statute and by rule to do. So please let me know if you have any of those questions. Thank you.
Anybody, are we ready for the DAS presentation? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Medina?
Okay.
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anthony Medina, and I'm an analyst in the Chief Financial Office. And today I'll be going over the Governor's recommended budget for the Board of Dentistry. One of the emerging issues for the Board of Dentistry is the increasing investigative workload. As Stephen touched on, this is a trend affecting a lot of our health regulatory agencies in the state of Oregon. The governor's budget maintains existing services and adds modest enhancements for 2017-19. Here's the expenditure history chart of the agency. For 2017-19, the governor's recommended budget supports the 15-17 LAB with the policy packages that Stephen touched on earlier. Here's the expenditure history broken down by category. Personnel service accounts for roughly 56% of the agency's expenditures in 2017-19. Here's a revenue history for the agency. You can see the jump in 15-17 when the agency received its fee increase. And for 17-19, it's a few adjustments made, but nothing in terms of a fee increase.
Barbara.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back one slide. We have been, it's generally been about two-thirds goes to personnel services and a third. So this is another one of those that's higher. Is that judicial expenses? Is that what's happening here as well?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Senator Roblin, you are correct.
Okay.
Generally for smaller agencies, personnel services roughly accounts for two-thirds of the agency's expenses. But with smaller agencies like the Board of Dentistry, and with Attorney General and sometimes state government service charges, it could bump up the service and supplies in terms of a percentage for the agency.
Thanks.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. To follow up on the good senator's question, we had pharmacy in here. Are you doing the, is dentistry having the contract versus services, paying by services? Do you have a standard contract for AG?
Services.
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, representative, wasn't it? As Stephen just mentioned to me, they pay by services.
By services, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I would like to ask a question about ending balance. I know you talked as part of your presentation about it was higher than expected. About how many months is it, and what is your goal? I mean, I guess all of our goal is about 3 months. So do you know what the ending balance for 2015, 2017 is going to be?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, just to expand on your question, are you asking about projected ending balance?
Yeah, I guess so, yes.
An actual ending balance
projected for 15-17, and then if in your figuring for 17-19, what's your goal ending balance for that for the next biennium?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, at the governor recommended budget, there's a projected ending balance of roughly $700,000, or 5 months, or 5 months of the ending balance. However, with actuals coming in higher, that number will be higher.
So that's the projected for 15-17?
For 17-19.
Okay, thank you. And what's the projected? Well, I guess we don't quite have a projected ending balance yet for 15-17. Okay. Thank you.
You can let her know. Projected is $200,000.
Okay. Co-Chair Smith Warner.
Yes.
Stephen, just let me know also that for her, end of 15-17, the current projection now is up to 900,000.
Okay. Yeah, that does. That's something that we'll probably want to. And you talked about all the reasons, the extra fees and penalties that have come in. And it's still something we'll probably want to keep an eye on going forward, just to, you know, whether it's your caseload is still up and you have this higher projected ending balance, whether that would be another discussion about going to contract investigators. You know, I don't want to make any projections, but it sounds like something we'll want to keep an eye on going forward to make sure that you guys can do your jobs as well as possible. Anyone else? Oh.
Thank you, Madam Representative Chair. Your questions, I've served in Ways and Means several sessions, but I've never asked it. So, serving in the largest bureaucracy in the world, Department of Defense, we, you know, certain funds would run out, or we're told to go out and spend it before the year ends. Are we allowed in our system, and can they ending balance to bring it back, you know, back down? Can they go out and buy the paperless policy option package, or go buy the security contract to bring that down? Is that
Senator Roblin, would you like to take that one?
There are no funds budget, so they always use their money to buy those things. When we approve these packages, it comes out of the money they pay.
So it could, but they're given. Excuse me,
Madam, please.
Thank you. Direct my question, Senator. So they could go out and buy things that they need to.
They can't buy them without authorization.
Okay.
So we have to authorize the spending before they can spend it.
Okay.
And that's yeah.
But again, that agency,
yes, please.
That I have all that money and I need these little things that you can come in and ask to spend it. Is that
we have to give out
before our bosses sweep it?
That's why we're having this presentation,
yeah.
And that's why they're saying we would like to spend some of this money we have on these packages going forward.
Because it's
and
not just
it will bring it down.
It's not just a better idea to ask permission than forgiveness. It's the way they have to do it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Hernandez.
Maybe there's more of a comment or a question. I mean, I would presume that knowing that there's a higher projected ending fund balance, that we would hire additional. That there should be a package in this to hire additional investigators. I don't know. That's just my assumption.
Right. I mean, my understanding, and again, I wasn't in this role 2 years ago, but my understanding is it's partially because of the chunk of time it took to get the investigator in, getting them up to speed.
Yep.
Indeed, it's a bigger investment than maybe the excessive ending balance would call for. And so it's a good instinct. And in the long run, it's one of the, you know, we try not to have the fees go up, down, every year. So it's, I think the idea of giving it another one more cycle to see if it works itself out, with the option of whether it's coming back in the 18 session and asking for an authorization to do that. I think the idea of kind of giving it another year to work through and see how it goes. Mr. Co-Chair, is that?
Well, yeah, we constantly watch your workload and how many projected months it's going to take to deal with that workload. Obviously, we want to keep it under control, and you know, I think 6-8 months is probably appropriate. Probably shouldn't expect it to get to 3.5. Not likely to happen, at least in the near future. On the other hand, we have to always have budget problems, and the big co-chairs and the presiding officers have been known to sweep from time to time. And so we don't want the ending balance to get too big, or, you know, somebody's going to come and grab it. So yeah. That's why this subcommittee needs to watch these things and keep it in balance. We want them to have sufficient resources, sufficient personnel to do their job. And if the workload gets out to, as it was a year ago, to 12 months, that's too long. So 2 years ago, we gave them the other investigator. Took them a while to hire that person, get them on board. They're on board now. The 12 months is coming down. See, it's down to about 10. Hopefully, it'll continue to come down a bit. So it's a balancing act. And that's why I believe that it's good to have a few people on these committees that are on the committee and have been on the committee and keep being appointed to the committee. And of course, I'm the classic example. I've been doing this for about 10 years. So, you know, you learn some things and you know what to watch. Then we get some of the newer people in, and that's great. And you get Wisnet, who was here a few years ago, and now he's back. And so it's all a balancing act. And I think, you know, this agency's doing pretty well. They're heading in the right direction. They're where I want them to be. So, you know, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't keep watching.
Thank you, Senator. If there's no other questions, I would like to thank you very much. Welcome to your good job on your first budget presentation. Thank you for being here. Now, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone else here? Is there anyone signed up to testify, Julie?
Yes. Oh,
Senator Roblin?
Did he finish the presentation?
Oh, he didn't. Oh, I thought you got to the last page. I'm sorry.
No.
My bad. Okay.
There's good
ending. Let me pull that back. Mr. Medina, why don't you continue?
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe. Members of the committee, I have one slide left.
Okay.
Here we go. The governor's budget supports current services and makes investments in the agency's security POP, the paperless project POP, their patient safety initiative POP, and for the board member compensation. There are also adjustments to the statewide DAS process and state government service charges that save the agency some money as well. But that concludes my presentation, and I can answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Senator Monroe?
One of the things that I learned a few biennia ago, I think it was from Gerard, maybe, and that was that substance abuse among the dental professionals is fairly high, and they have instituted kind of self-help, and that's one of the things that are reviewed from time to time is, what do we do when we find out that a dentist or a dental hygienist, because they have access to all these drugs, what do we do when we find out that they have an abuse problem? And the answer is, we try to get them help so that they can continue in their profession without danger to themselves or certainly to their clients. But, you know, you wouldn't think that, I mean, you know, medical professionals, they shouldn't have a substance abuse problem. It's actually quite prevalent. And it kind of reminds me of Catholic priests You know, Catholic priests have a very high incidence of alcoholism. And one of the reasons is because sacramental wine is alcohol, and they are taking it on a regular basis and using it on a regular basis, and sometimes they have a substance abuse problem. And, you know, when any group of people, well, that's just an example I thought of. Any people, you know, when there's a group of people that we recognize have a potential substance abuse problem, then we as a society need to get them help, you know. And I think we're doing that. The dental profession, we're certainly doing that.
There was a lot of good information about that as part of your presentation. Representative Parrish?
Can I follow up on Senator Monroe? I mean, do we have safe harbor if somebody, a dentist, comes to the board before there is actually something more nefarious with, like, they, you know, got a DUI or something that relates to sort of an alcohol or drug addiction? I mean, if they come to the board and say, I got a problem and I need to take a pause and get this solved, that we have, like, safe harbor for their license?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Parrish. Yes, we do. That's the Healthcare Professional Services Program. That's the confidential diversion program. So we have a diversion coordinator in our office, and this happens quite regularly. They come in, they communicate with them what's happened, what's going on. So as long as they are in touch with our diversion coordinator, it's an alternative route from the disciplinary process so that they can get the help and we can work with them. And it's all confidential. There's no public record to this, and there's no discipline. There's only discipline eventually if they don't follow through on the program and the treatment and all that stuff. But we do have the help for them.
Very good.
Great. Thank you. Okay. If there are no further... Okay.
So I would just like to make a comment. Again, thank you, Co-Chair. I think this is great. I appreciate the presentation and understanding the board better. I am with my colleague, though, and I'm not against this, but when we talk about, we've reached a point we have to provide security at board meetings for volunteers to feel comfortable, there's just something wrong. But I appreciate why you're doing it. We got to do that. But if that's the direction we're headed in the wrong direction.
Amen. Okay, with that, thank you so much. Now I will ask, is there anyone else who would like to testify or has signed up? No one has signed up. Is anyone so moved? Rosie? No? Okay, if not, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5514, and thank you both for your testimony. And is there any other business for the good of the order? Okay.
Co-Chair, John, do we have any information on what we'll be doing on Monday?
excuse me, I have to check the schedule. I can't remember which board is up on Monday.
I believe we have the psychiatric examiners, unless that has changed.
On email.
Also, potentially the counselors and therapists.
That'll be
4-1,
Tuesday
right.
And Wednesday.
Representative
Wisnett? And Co-Chair Monroe.
4-6.
I was attending a meeting with people in my district this morning, and specifically Madras, because that's where our group is going to go to. And I would appreciate if LFO and the big co-chairs, would consider, we've done this for several, we've all been on the road shows. There is an effort by out of that district people to come and sign up and dominate the time and the presentations. Mm. We're going out to hear from the local people. But, you know, we might want to reverse, like in our committee hearings, we say if you came in Salem, we say if you came more than 50 miles, then you get a priority in hearing. We may want to reverse that and say if you came
more than
if you live next door,
the people who closest should get testimony first. That's the objective, is to hear from the not from people from Salem or Portland to take a bus out with 25 people and testify.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well,
good
we'll pass that on.
Good idea.
Good job.
Thank you. Anything else? Otherwise, we'll see you all Monday morning at 8:28.
Barbara and I aren't the ones that make that decision.
Please pass it on, Mr. Senator.
I heard it was Barbara that made all those decisions.
Yeah, right.
And we are closed. Thank you. And we are closed. Thank you.
Yeah, right.